Today, we're going to get into the details of how to run a successful dental business. I'm going to show you some things that have worked for me and some things that I've seen work for other people. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I've run a successful dental practice, and I've been able to help many dentists transition into practice ownership. So the first step to running a successful dental practice is going to be having enough patients on your schedule. If you want to maximize the revenue from your practice, you're going to need at least 1,000 patients, ideally 2,000 patients in your hygiene recall system. If you have 2,000 patients, and ideally every patient is coming back at exactly 6 months for their recall exam, that's going to be 4,000 recall appointments per year. In real life, every patient is not going to come back at exactly 6 months, so you need to plan on having between 3,000 to 4,000 hygiene appointments per year. The average full-time hygienist is going to be able to see about 1,500 patients per year. So if your goal is to have 2,000 active patients, you're going to need 2 to 3 full-time hygienists working at your practice. Building up a practice is like filling a jug full of water that has holes in it. You can add all the water you want to this jug, but if you don't patch those holes, the water is just going to keep leaking out. I see a lot of new dentists who want to grow their practice, and they think the first thing that they should do is market and try to get new patients into their practice, try to find as many new patients as possible, because that's what the DSOs and the corporate dental offices are doing. They're doing all this marketing to bring in new patients into the door. I actually prefer practices that don't have to do a lot of external marketing to keep an active patient base. The better that you get at retaining the patients that you already have, the less money and effort that you have to put in to advertising and marketing to bring new patients in. DSOs like Aspen and Heartland are generally terrible at retaining their patients. The reason why they have to spend so much money on marketing is because the service is so much worse than a private practice, a lot of the patients don't end up staying around. If every time a patient comes to the office, there's a new dentist, there's new assistants, there's a new hygienist, there's new people at the front desk, the patients start to think, well, if the employees don't even want to stay, why would I want to come back? Existing patients are 100 times better than new patients. The more and more new patients you have, the higher likelihood that you're going to have someone crazy come into your office. If you want to meet some crazy people, go work at an office run by Heartland or Aspen. Yeah, at these offices, you're going to see a lot of new patients, but oftentimes the type of patient that wasn't happy at their previous dentist and is deciding that they're going to go see a new dentist is likely to be a more difficult patient. The more new patients you get, the higher number of difficult patients you're going to have. Oftentimes, the best, easiest to work with patients that are willing to spend the most on treatment are the patients that have been coming to a practice for year after year and are loyal to that practice. So how do you get these 2,000 loyal active patients? So the most obvious and easiest way to get a practice with a lot of patients is to buy a practice that has a lot of patients. When I see people comparing startups to acquisitions and say, well, I can get better equipment and be in a nicer location if I do a startup than if I do this acquisition, it seems like a waste of money. Yeah, but when you do a startup, you don't have any existing patients. Best case scenario when you do a startup is that you do a lot of marketing and get a lot of new patients. But like we just said, new patients aren't as good as existing patients. When you buy an existing practice with established patients that have been going to that office for 10, 15, 20 years, those are the best quality patients you can get. Maybe you already have a practice, you did a startup, or you did an acquisition, but you don't have enough loyal patients at your practice. The best way to find more patients for your practice is still going to be to buy a practice. I have a friend who did a startup, and he was really, really struggling at his startup for like 2 to 3 years. He actually had to work an associate job 3 days a week while he was at his startup because he only had enough patients to keep his office open 2 days a week. His building, his location, everything was incredibly nice. It was a very nice practice, but he just didn't have enough patients at this practice. He actually, a couple years after he started that practice, found a practice to buy and he merged it with his practice. He brought the patients over. And then all of a sudden he went from having a practice that was only open 2 days a week to having a practice that his schedules were filled 4 days a week because he bought a practice and merged together. So even if you already have a practice, don't give up on the idea of trying to buy another practice. Buying a practice is still going to be the best way to find patients, the best types of patients. The second way to grow your practice to this 2,000 active patient number is going to be just being nice to people. It seems obvious, like, oh yeah, of course I'm going to be nice to people. But a lot of dentists really are not very nice. If you have a team member at your office that's not nice to the patients, get rid of them today. I would choose a hygienist any day that maybe they only remove 80% of the plaque on the patient, but they're super nice and the patients love them, over a hygienist that goes in and removes every single bit of plaque and every bit of calculus, but is rude to the patients and the patients leave unhappy. Number three is to make sure that every single patient has an appointment scheduled before they leave your office. Under no circumstances, no exceptions, should any patient ever leave your office without having their next appointment scheduled. After every hygiene appointment, make sure that that patient is scheduled to come back in 6 months. And if the patient says, "I don't know what my work schedule looks like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to come back, I don't know what times I'll be available that day," just go ahead and schedule them and then send them a confirmation text a week before their appointment when that time comes. And if they're unable to come, at that point you'll reschedule them. But you want to make sure that they're scheduled so that they don't fall through the cracks. If you're not rescheduling your patients, you don't know if they're ever going to come back. If you just bought a dental practice, you probably paid something like $500 per patient. Are you really going to let them walk out of your office without making sure that they're rescheduled to come back? Number four is, if a patient misses their appointment, you need to make sure that you have a system to call back those patients and reschedule them. If you're not careful when patients cancel their appointments, they can get lost in the cracks. You need to make sure that as soon as a patient's appointment is canceled or they miss their appointment, that they're put onto a list and that list is followed up upon weekly to make sure that that patient gets added back to the hygiene schedule at some point. And then finally, number five, after you have done all of these other things, then you can start marketing to new patients. Some offices, you might have to do some marketing in order to fill your schedule up. That's fine. You can still find some good patients through marketing. It's just gonna be a lot more expensive and a lot more difficult. It's just so much better to retain the patients you have or buy a practice that already has patients. Number two is treatment planning everything. Do not be afraid to tell patients that they need work done. The patients are coming to you because they want you to tell them what work they need done. If you see decay on a radiograph, don't put a watch on it because you're afraid to tell the patient that they have too many cavities. If a patient comes in with a cavity on every single tooth, you need to treatment plan every single tooth. If a patient has a crack or a fracture in one of their teeth, don't just put a watch on it until the next appointment. Treatment plan the crown right then. You do not want that patient to be chewing on something at Thanksgiving and they bite into something and their tooth breaks and it ruins the rest of their holiday. You want to treatment plan everything you see right then. Make sure that your radiograph equipment is up to date and that you're getting high resolution, high contrast images. If you're using some sort of outdated radiograph equipment and you think that you can't afford to buy a new x-ray machine or new sensors or a new pan or a new CBCT or whatever you need, that's a terrible way to look at it. The fact is, you can't afford to not upgrade your equipment. The only way you're ever going to increase the revenue at your practice is by increasing the production that you do. The only way you're ever going to increase production is by increasing your treatment planning. And the best way to find more treatment is by having adequate tools to do your diagnostics. Patients are coming to you expecting that you have the proper technology and skills and abilities to treatment plan comprehensively on them. Never judge a patient based upon their appearances as to whether or not they're going to be able to afford the treatment. I don't care how poor a patient looks, I always give them the best treatment option first. I once had a patient come to see me who needed a lot of work done. And he was Hispanic and he didn't speak any English. And it would have been easy for me to judge him and say, there's no way he's gonna be able to afford this treatment. But I gave him a treatment plan for, I think it was like $13,000. He went out to his car, he got the cash, and he came in and he paid for the entire treatment plan up front, in full, in cash that day. You always want to present the best treatment first. If they come back and say, "Well, doc, I can't afford that right now. Is there anything else we can do?" Then I start to offer them some of the lower options. Maybe instead of the full prosthesis, we do an implant supported denture. If they can't do that, Then we go and we do the standard denture. Don't treatment plan a four surface composite. Treatment plan a crown and a buildup. Don't treatment plan an extraction. Treatment plan an extraction with a bone graft and implant. Don't treatment plan a denture. Treatment plan a fixed prosthesis. Don't treatment plan an anterior composite without at least offering the patients an option for a three quarters crown or a veneer. Don't treatment plan a single anterior crown without at least giving the patient the option to do the full front eight veneers. Lastly, don't sleep on preventative care because you think maybe it's not profitable enough or not worth your time. You can actually make a lot of money on preventative care. One thing you need to absolutely make sure you're doing is every single patient needs to receive fluoride. You might get a few that refuse it or say they don't want it. And of course you have to respect patient wishes, but just because they say they don't want it, go ahead and question them on that and say, why don't you want it? Do you realize that it's the standard of care to provide fluoride to every patient? Make sure they realize that fluoride is actually going to remineralize their teeth, prevent decay, and potentially keep them from having to come back to you for much more expensive and more invasive procedures. Depending on your fees, fluoride can be worth anywhere from $30 to $50 per patient. And the cost to apply fluoride on a patient is like 25 cents for a little thing of fluoride. Not only is fluoride extremely affordable, you don't even have to apply it yourself. You're gonna have your hygienist or your assistant apply the fluoride. Another thing some dentists just completely forget about is sealants. Sealants are incredibly effective. They're so easy to put on. You don't even have to anesthetize the patient. And you can have an assistant or a hygienist do it depending on what the laws are in your state. Sealants are not just for kids. Sealants work on adults. Adults get occlusal decay just like kids do. If you find an adult that has deep pits or grooves in their teeth, sealants can be incredibly beneficial to patients, both in preventing decay, but also helping keeping them from getting food stuck in their teeth when they're eating. No one likes having food stuck in their teeth after a meal. Make sure you are looking for and offering sealants to all of your patients. Don't forget about SRPs and perio maintenance appointments. Especially if you have a patient with insurance. Oftentimes, scaling and root planning and perio maintenance appointments are covered by insurance, where you might be making $100 at a prophy appointment. You might make $1,000 at a scaling appointment. I'm not saying to do scalings on patients that don't need it, but statistically, at least a third of the patients that come to your office are going to have periodontal disease and could benefit from scaling and root planing. Sure, your hygienist might get annoyed that she now has to do probing depths on all of your patients, but that standard of care, she was supposed to be doing that anyways, but you want her to do that because it's extremely profitable for you when you find scaling and root planing patients. Finally, a lot of patients have TMJ and nocturnal bruxism. You have the ability to do a digital scan or take a quick impression and make them a night guard that's going to dramatically improve their lives, and it's gonna make you $300, $400, $500, $600. Night guards are one of the most easiest procedures that you can do at your office, and they're extremely profitable and such a small amount of work. You might have to do a little bit of adjustment at the delivery appointment, but they're extremely simple to do. I don't care if you have one patient on your schedule or 2,000 appointments on your schedule, the better you get at treatment planning, the better care you are going to be able to provide for your patients, and the more money you're going to be making. All right, so you've got a practice with 2,000 active patients, you're comprehensively treatment planning on these patients. How do you actually go from treatment plan to having money in your pocket? You provide that treatment to your patients. You need to make sure that your patients are following through with their treatment. Case acceptance. You can treatment plan all day long if you want, but if your patients are not following through on their treatment, then you're just screaming it at the wind. Your treatment plans only matter if the patient follows through and does the treatment that you recommend. I first came across this framework from a guy named Alex Hormozi, and it's actually amazing for case acceptance. The framework has six steps and it has an acronym CLOSER, C-L-O-S-E-R. Step one, clarify, is you start by clarifying the patient's needs, their concerns, and their goals. You need to ask every patient, why are you here? Maybe they're there because they're concerned about the aesthetics of their teeth, and maybe they're just wanting a checkup because they're worried they might have decay. I completely get it, Mrs. Smith. You want to make sure that your teeth are perfect for your daughter's wedding. I agree, Mr. Roberts. favorites, you definitely do not want to have to worry about your teeth breaking when you're out to eat with your friends. Step number two is label, and that's where you give your patient's complaint a name. If you're able to put a name to your patient's problem, then they're going to assume that you also have the answer to that problem. All right, Mrs. Johnson, I've looked at your x-ray and you actually have an abscess on your tooth that's been caused from decay. All right, Mrs. Carey, you were saying you're not happy with the color of your teeth. To me, it looks like your teeth are a shade of about A3. We can actually whiten those teeth by 2 to 3 shades lighter if that's what you're interested in. You just want to make sure the patients understand that you understand their problem. Next is O for overview. This is where you're going to provide a high-level summary of the solution. Unless patients ask, they generally don't care about specifics. They just want you to give them an overview of what you're going to do so that they feel confident that you understand what you're doing. Next is S for sell the vacation. If you're trying to convince someone to go to Hawaii, you don't sell them by telling them about the flight where they're not going to have enough leg room and where the person in front of them leans their chair too far back. You want to tell them about the amazing weather that they're going to experience, the amazing time they're going to have with their family on the beach. Patients don't care about the techniques you're going to be using in the root canal. They just care that you're going to be able to get them out of pain. Next, you want to explain away concerns. You're going to address any objections, fears, or doubts they might have. By this point in the process, if you've been listening to the patient, you probably have a pretty good idea of what the patient is concerned about. You want to address any of their fears and objections, ideally before they even bring them to you. If the patient seems like they're nervous, talk to them about how you have the latest cutting-edge numbing medicine. If your patient is really worried about the time it's going to take for their new crowns or veneers to come back from the lab, talk about how great your assistant is at making lifelike temporary. And lastly, you want to reinforce the decision that your customer has made. Once the patient agrees to go forward with the treatment, talk about how last week you did this really good set of veneers on a patient. And if you have an example photo, maybe just show it to them real quick. Even better yet, if you have like a front desk team member that you did some cosmetic work on or some implants on, ideally they'll tell the patient about how great the work was and how they haven't had any problems since it was done. Unless you're in a very specific situation, you are going to need to take insurance. The next step is something a lot of new dentists don't understand, and that's maximizing insurance utilization. Not all insurance plans are created equal. So many dentists are leaving money on the table by not taking advantage of the insurance plans that they are in network with. First off, you need to make sure that your office understands the insurance plans that you take. This doesn't necessarily have to be something that you do yourself. If you hire the right insurance people and the right office manager to run your front of the house, you might not even have to think about this. But if you're at a smaller office and you don't have the right team in place, it is something that you're probably going to want to look into yourself. Make sure that you understand what treatment is allowed under an insurance plan. Make sure you're taking full advantage of everything that insurance plan is willing to cover. Typically, each insurance plan will have rules about how often you're allowed to take certain types of radiographs. Make sure your insurance person is putting a note in the chart of each patient saying when they're due for each radiograph. Radiographs can actually be very profitable, and they really don't require very much work. You basically have to do nothing yourself. Just glance over the x-ray after it's taken. The assistant or the hygienist is gonna do all the work. You've already paid for the x-ray equipment. Just by remembering to take x-rays, you can increase your production by $30, $40, $50, sometimes $100 or more just by taking x-rays. Radiographs are one of the most important ways to find treatment on patients. The more radiographs you take, the better. The amount of radiation you're exposing to the patient is so incredibly low that it's negligible. Every time you're able to take an x-ray, take it. And if you need an x-ray that's not being covered by insurance, just inform the patient how important that x-ray is and tell them they're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. Now, once you or someone at your front desk understands the insurance benefits, it's your responsibility to educate your patients on their insurance benefits. There's a cognitive bias called loss aversion that describes the tendency to perceive losses as more impactful than gains of the same size. People hate it when they have a benefit that they're not taking advantage of. Make sure the patient knows that they have $2,000 in their benefit plan that if they don't use by the end of the year, they are going to lose and they're never going to be able to get it back. A patient might tell you, well, I'm just going to wait until next year to do that. If a patient hasn't used up their insurance maximum, make sure they understand that if they don't get the work done this year, they're going to lose that money. Then come back to the patient and say, well, what if you get this work done in January and you use up your maximum, and then in February you have a tooth break and you have to have another crown done? Then Because you've used up your maximum, you're going to have to pay for 100% of that treatment out of pocket. Wouldn't it be better to get this work done this year so that you don't have to worry about that happening? Next thing is you want to make sure that your patients are returning at exactly 6 months or whatever the plan allows for the next cleaning appointment. Let's say, for example, you have a practice that's doing $1 million a year. Your patients, instead of coming back every 6 months, are returning on average every 9 months. If on average your patients return every 9 months instead of 6 months, your hygiene production is going to be 25% lower. For a practice producing $1 million, if your hygiene percentage is 25%, that's $62,000 that you are losing by not rescheduling your patients at the 6 month mark. Now, in addition to making sure your patients are fully utilizing their insurance, you want to make sure that you're receiving the maximum reimbursement possible for the work that you're doing. Not all insurance plans pay the same. When I first took over my office, I had some plans at my office that were paying $1,100 for a crown and a buildup, and the same practice, same procedure, I had some plans that were only paying $250. Same crown, two very different prices. So there's four things you can do if an insurance plan is not adequately paying you for your work. Number one is you can drop the insurance plan. You can go out of network. The first day that I owned my practice, I dropped that plan that was paying only $250 per crown. It just was not worth my time to be in network with that plan. Now, you don't have to tell patients, "I don't accept your insurance." If they ask you, you tell them, "We're not in network with your insurance provider, but we can still bill them. You'll just be required to pay the difference." The next thing you can do is negotiate. With some insurance plans, you can go to them and say, "My reimbursement rates are too low. I'm going to drop the plan if you don't raise the price." And sometimes they'll be willing to raise their reimbursement rates. Some companies like Delta Dental, for instance, is notorious for not being willing to negotiate. It's just going to depend, but it's worth a try. The third thing you can do is an umbrella policy. This is a strategy that I used at my office. There are companies you can sign up with that have negotiated higher contracts with the insurance companies. The advantage with these umbrella policies is that you can sign up for one plan and then you are signed up for a bunch of different insurance companies. Sometimes you can find an umbrella policy that has higher reimbursement rates than going direct with the insurance companies. So not only is it more convenient because you now only have to fill out one sheet of paperwork rather than 20, you also are getting higher reimbursement rates than if you went direct. Not every company, like we already talked about Delta Dental, is going to be covered by an umbrella policy, but sometimes you can get quite a few that are, and then you have fewer contracts to have to worry about. Finally, it might be worth considering add-on procedures. If you are good enough at convincing patients to sign up for procedures that are not covered by their insurance plan, for instance, maybe clear aligners or implants, then you might be able to set your own out-of-pocket price for these procedures. If you have an office where you're doing a lot of cosmetic work or ortho or implants, it might be worth taking a little bit of cut on the patient's cleanings so that you can upsell them on some expensive veneers or implants. Next on the list is maximizing scheduling. There are millions of things that we could say about scheduling. Maybe I'll do another video sometime where we go into how I like to schedule patients. But today we are going to focus on two things that play a massive impact on your production. The first is batching treatment. Try to do as much work as you possibly can at each appointment. When you run a dental practice, your overhead is a relatively fixed number. Your rent's not going to change and your employees are usually paid hourly. So the more that you can produce in a day, the higher your profit margin is going to be. For me, it takes almost the same amount of time to do 3 crowns as it does to do 1 crown. I already have the patient in the chair. I still have to do anesthesia. We still have to do a digital scan. We still have to wait for the crown to come back in the mail. Maybe it takes 20 to 30% longer to do 2 or 3 crowns instead of one, but your profit margin on doing multiple crowns is dramatically higher than just doing one. So let's say you do a crown for $1,000. Your fixed expenses for that crown are $700. You have to have a building. You have to have electricity. You have to have an assistant there, you have to have front desk. And then let's say $100 in variable expenses, supplies, and lab costs. So if you do a crown for $1,000, you only make $200 per crown. But if you do a second crown, your fixed expenses are not going to change at all. You're going to have to pay a lab fee, but you're going to be able to use a lot of the same supplies you were using. So maybe your second crown costs $60 in variable costs. So your first crown you made $200 on, your second crown you make $940 on. You just went from making $200 doing one crown to making more than $1,000 doing 2 crowns. That's a 500% increase. Batching treatment is one of the most profitable things that you can do as a dentist. Now, along the same lines is a similar strategy you can use, and that's same day treatment. If you're working on a patient and you see additional work that needs done, sit them up in the chair right then and ask them if they want to add that on to today's procedure. The same logic applies to same day treatment as batching treatment. You're already paying your fixed costs. You already have the patient in the chair. Any additional work that you can add on to that appointment is basically going to be 100% profit that goes straight to your pocket. Anytime a patient is in your chair, whether it's for an exam or for treatment, see if you can do same day treatment while the patient is there. If you're doing a recall exam and you see some small occlusal decay on one of your patients, don't schedule them to come back for that. Just do it right then in the chair and get it over with. If you're doing a limited exam and you see a cracked tooth or a patient is in pain, just do the work that appointment. Don't make the patient come back and go through pain for the next few days while they're waiting to be rescheduled. Not only is it better for the patient, but it's better for you financially to just get the work done that day. Every time you let a patient leave your office with treatment that hasn't been completed, there's generally a 30 to 50% chance that patient is not going to come back to get that work done. If you get started on the treatment while the patient is already there, it's a 100% chance that they're going to get the work done because you've already done it. Patients love the same day treatment. They've already had to get time off work. They've already had to get babysitters to watch their kids. They're there in the office. They just want to get the work done. Every time you do same day treatment, it saves you from having to fill up a spot on your schedule next week. And it also prevents you from having cancellations. You're saving money on supply costs. You're saving time for your team because that's less sterilization and less time they have to spend flipping rooms. You're making more money. The patient is happy. Same day treatment. Number 7 is that if you want a profitable dental practice, you want to build a business, not just a job. The decision to become an owner can be one of the most freeing things a dentist can do. But if you're not careful, you can create for yourself a job that's even worse than being an associate. Because at least an associate can quit, but you as an owner can't just walk away from your practice without losing a lot of money. If you want to have a business rather than just another job, then you're going to need to spend some time building your business. The way that you build a business is by creating systems. Your goal is to get to the point where the only thing that you are doing in your office is clinical work, seeing patients, and everything else has been outsourced to someone else. Once you get to a point where the office is able to run with you only doing clinical work, then you can start to consider hiring an associate to come in and replace even some of the clinical work or all of the clinical work. You as an owner should never be ordering supplies for your business. You should have one of your employees doing that. You shouldn't be cleaning floors or cleaning bathrooms. Either you hire someone to do it or you find a company to do that for you. You want to set up systems that make you obsolete. Make sure your assistants are doing everything that they're legally able to do. Make sure your front desk is able to run smoothly without asking you for any opinions. You want to give away as much responsibility as you possibly can. Don't waste your time doing things that other people can do. Also, if your goal is to create a business that can run without you, don't be putting pictures of yourself all over the office and don't name it Dr. Smith Family Dentistry. I know a dentist who recently hired his first associate. And when the associate came in, the patients were not receptive of that associate. This owner had been marketing the practice with his name and his face, and the patients were there to see him. And so when they showed up and there was an associate there that they didn't recognize, they were upset. If you ever think you might want to hire an associate to work at your office, or if you think you might want to be able to sell your practice one day, which you absolutely should because that's a way to potentially make hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, then do your best to try to keep your personal brand somewhat separated from the identity of your business. In my first practice, I didn't have my name or my picture anywhere in the practice. I didn't have my name on the business card. It just said the name of the office. Most of the patients probably didn't even know my name or who I was. They had only seen me with my mask on, so they probably didn't even know what I looked like. They didn't care. They were there to get the work done. When I eventually sold this office, it was incredibly easy to sell because the buyer was just able to walk in and continue where I left off. Ultimately, practice ownership is a marathon, not a sprint. You're going to make some mistakes. Don't overthink it. I remember in middle school, I had a Game Boy Color, and I bought this thing called a Game Shark, which was a contraption that you put into the Game Boy, and then you attach the game to that, and it allowed you to add cheats to the game. I thought it was going to be so fun being able to be invincible and have unlimited coins and unlimited health and unlimited star powers and whatever else. But what I quickly found out is that cheating in the game kind of took away the fun from the game. The challenge in the game was actually what made the game fun and enjoyable to play in the first place. If you have a point where your business is not as profitable or as successful as you were hoping it was going to be, rather than get down on yourself, be excited that you now have some new challenges that you're going to be able to face. I hope that this video has given you some ideas of how you can tackle some of these problems and how you can make your practice more successful. If you've recently become a practice owner and you would like to just have someone to ask questions to and bounce ideas off of, you can find my email in the description. Absolutely reach out and ask any questions that you have. I love getting emails and will be happy to answer your questions. In the end, life is a game. Enjoy it, have fun, and don't stress yourself out too much.